This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Jared Bowen. It's a little bit hard to get into the holiday spirit with this unseasonably mild weather, but we're going to try with the help of Boston Pops conductor Keith Lockhart. He's the maestro of the mistletoe, whose holiday pop season is now underway around New England and, of course, at Symphony Hall. He joins me here in Studio 3. Keith Lockhart, welcome back.
Thank you, Jared. Good to see you. And I like that title, by the way. I hope I can use it in the future.
You know, I wrote it and I thought, has he ever been called that before?
No, so I think it's a first. And that's saying a lot after 18 years of doing this.
Feel free to use it. So, okay, I'm a little bit ashamed to admit this, but I didn't realize Sleigh Ride, which we just came in with, it's owned by the Boston Pops, essentially, in that it was first recorded there. So it's yours.
Well, I wish we had maintained ownership of it, because it seems to be, I'm told, it's the most played on radio across the world holiday song. So I wish we'd kept a chunk of that. But no, it was written for us. Similarly to the Christmas song, Mel Torme's classic, it was written during a heat wave a couple years later, I believe 1946. The words were added later, and it has gone on to become one of the most beloved of holiday songs, and it's ours.
So, yeah, of course, and you're always looking at other pieces to do new arrangements and whatnot. Is that something you ever tinker with? Do you ever go in and play with Sleigh Ride?
Well, we have tinkered with it a little bit. The way people seem to still prefer it from us is the way it was originally written, which is as an instrumental piece for the orchestra. As I said, the words were added later. But my first couple of years here, we added a choral arrangement on top of that arrangement so people could hear the words that they're familiar with. And we have guest performers come in with us and do it in all sorts of ways. We get Motown versions, an R&B version, jazz riffs on it. Everything. I haven't had a hip hop version yet, but I'm sure that's out there.
No, you just mentioned it was written in the heat of summer, and I was thinking about that today because that must be when you're planning the holiday pop season. So, and you're again looking at how you're going to change things up and do things differently, and how do you get inspired when that's happening when people are in bathing suits outside?
Well, it is a little bit of pressure, but you're right. It was about the same temperature in June as it is now. As it turns out, it's been kind of a strange year. We start planning really in some ways. Right now for next year, because we think of things that we'd like to do as we're doing them. It's hard to think about them in June, July. Also things that we wish we'd done better or done differently. And so we try to make mental notes of those things so that we continue to refine the product.
In some regard, one might think that you have a limited canon with which to work because you're just working with holiday music, of course. So how do you sort of mine new areas and how do you continue to keep it fresh? As you said, you're in your 18th year now.
Well, we are limited by the fact that it is a single holiday period. But that having been said, it's by far the richest mine for great music. There is more great music written about the Christmas season in orchestral terms and in popular music terms than there is in any other single thing. So there's enough. That having been said, people come to these concerts for tradition. People come to these concerts to get back in touch with things that they may not have thought of for the past year. If we had a great holiday concert of all music that people did not know, people would hate it. So what we try to do very carefully is balance making everybody say, oh, boy, I'm so glad they played that for me, with, oh, I hadn't heard that one or hadn't heard that one in that way. And we have a huge library that we add to constantly. And we always look, I really try to make sure that everybody who comes to one of these concerts goes out there thinking there's something on the program we played just for them.
So what are you doing this year that's a little bit different, a little way that you're branching out?
Well, it's always small things. They sound kind of silly when you describe them. But one of them, for instance, is that we always – one big feature of Boston Pops holiday concerts is that Santa does show up. We have a special agreement with Santa. And even though he's very busy, he manages to find time to come to our concerts. Over the years, back in the 70s when the holiday pops concerts started in earnest, we have an arrangement of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, an instrumental that we were still playing when I came here. And we still do play that on occasion. But since then, we've added several different Santa entrants moments, and we have a brand new one this year by the brilliant Broadway arranger David Chase, who's the same person who gave us that amazing version of 12 Days of Christmas that everybody's talking about. And so that's pepped it up a little bit. It's not only Santa Claus is Coming to Town, but it's also I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus and a bunch of other Santa-related tunes. So that's a fun new thing for this year.
And tomorrow night, and I've seen her perform with you before, but at a company night at Pops, which is always your big annual fundraiser, you have Vanessa Williams coming. What is she like to work with? And it must be harder to get her because I know her most recent show, I believe, was canceled, but she's been everywhere recently. She's had a lot of success.
Well, she's huge. She is She's a consummate professional, very easy to work with, very, very sweet and very straightforward. We've worked with her a couple of times, but never over Christmas. And her music director is a man named Rob Mathis, who has done a lot of arranging for the Pops. It'll be great to see him as well. And we know, therefore, that the charts are excellent on top of that. But, you know, I have to say on top of that, one of the impressions of Vanessa is that she is just one of the most beautiful, physically beautiful human beings I have ever seen. And that does, there's kind of a glow coming off of her on the stage, and I think it's really her.
Now, how does that work when you have your special guest artists? And of course, you've had this unbelievable range of people, and I know one of your favorites was Rosemary Clooney. But when they come in, do you work with them, or do they come in knowing what they want to perform? Because I have spoken to many of them. I know a lot of them come in acknowledging that they're at Symphony Hall, which is sort of a milestone in their own careers.
Well, it's a big deal for, you know, for many of these performers. Many of them don't work with orchestras on a regular basis. And of course, there's a certain panache to working at Symphony Hall and with the Boston Pops, perhaps America's best known orchestra. But it's when we decide what they want to do, it's usually a back and forth. And sometimes there's practical things involved, like simply what they have already charted for Symphony Orchestra. In the case of Vanessa, she had a rather large set of orchestral charts, and we try to steer them in ways that allow us to put pieces into the concert that maybe we haven't played that year, but largely we leave it to them to create a set that they're comfortable performing with us.
And a lot of the guest stars like Rosemary Clooney that you've had over the years are now, they're sort of the torchbearers for holiday music, you know, and there, of course, there are people like Bing Crosby and Johnny Mathis. Who do you see as sort of being the music stars, the holiday music stars of today? Because it seems there's almost sort of a generation gap that you had all those people in the Frank Sinatra classics, but then you didn't see it so much for generations.
Well, that's an interesting question. There are a lot of good Christmas albums. It almost seems obligatory now that every single vocal performing artist has to release a holiday album, but so many of them are covers of the classics. There's not a lot of new holiday material that I'm in love with. Some of the most beautiful new holiday songs end up either by Christian artists or on the country labels. And a whole lot of what the more popular artists do tend to be covers of other things. So I'm trying to think of what my there's that Mariah Carey song
from a couple years ago. She's the only one that I can think of in the last probably 20 or 30 years.
All I Want for Christmas Is You, the song that figures prominently in Love Actually, yeah. Which I think is really one of my favorite Christmas songs written since Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire.
What are some of the other favorites? And do you find a proclivity to want to work them into the season, your own personal biases?
Well, I do, and I try to avoid that, but I like to, of course, one of the wonderful things about driving the boat is you get to drive it where you want to go, and I think there is an advantage to that, too, because the audience sees me performing pieces that I'm really in love with. I've always been a Christmas music junkie, a music junkie in general, I guess, but very, very tied up with the holiday season, and I like a lot of the great old carols, things like Angels We Have Heard on High and Joy to the World. And those things really say Christmas to me. As well, Silver Bells is a favorite that we don't actually do all that much at the Pops. And maybe it's a little old-fashioned for some people, and I should bring that back.
And so you're coming away with all sorts of ideas today.
Yes, exactly. Jared, you've inspired me. Thank you for that.
I sat behind your parents a couple of years ago at one of the opening nights. Maybe it was even last year, last spring. And I got the sense and they were so cute sitting there and they were so proud of you. And I got the sense that you probably grew up in a very traditional family. Now, this is, you know, judging a book by its cover, just from what I saw.
Oh, I think you guessed right. Yes. My parents are very, very sweet, very traditional, very, in some ways, very simple people whom I'm still not quite sure have any idea how they came up with a conductor. But they've always been very supportive and very, very genuine in their support. And they still have that same enthusiasm for going to concerts as they did when they were sitting in the audience and I made my debut concert with the Pops something like 1,500 concerts ago.
Wow. And what were your Christmases like growing up with them? And you grew up in New England, right?
I grew up in upstate New York in Poughkeepsie. actually. So closer to Tanglewood than I am now. And they were very, you know, white steepled New England kind of church, going to midnight service, Santa Claus and trees and lots of singing, and very traditional, involved family, did not involve a lot of exotic travel. I'm, you know, of an old enough generation that was either only really rich people or because some family member was in great danger that you ever got on a plane.
Now, tell me what I know that you're also recording this season or parts of this season for a CD next year. So what is that experience like? I mean, how do you actually – what is the process in the hall?
Well, it's a little bit more challenging. I think there are advantages to it. Basically, we have in the time I've been with the Pops, we've released two holiday albums – Holiday Pops, which was, I think, 1997, and then just from, what, 5 or 6 years ago, Sleigh Ride. I guess it's longer. I guess it's closer to 10 years ago now, which was a self-produced album by the Boston Pops. And we produced so many new arrangements that we could do one every 2 years. But, of course, you try to, you know, wait till the demand comes back up. And because of changes in the way recordings are done these days and the money that it costs to record them, recording them live makes more financial sense for us. But it includes with it a lot of problems. It's tough to get – I mean, you want to have the ambiance of knowing there's an audience there, but you don't want somebody dropping a wine bottle and a whole tray of glasses in the middle of the soft part. And with that, with 2,000 people in there, that kind of thing tends to happen. So what we do is we record it several times over the course, and I did not. We recorded last year and this year different pieces, so that I wasn't bound by what I needed to put on the recording by what I'd like to play for the live audience. And we record it several times, and hope that between those times we will not have inappropriate too much enthusiasm. At the wrong moment.
That's great. And finally, I just want to ask you, the last time we spoke was out on the lawn at Tanglewood this summer, and we were talking about how difficult it is for classical music right now. But do you find...
You were talking about where you buy your khakis, too. I remember that. I actually went and bought khakis at the store you suggested.
Did you really? Yes. You have a very good memory, because we realize we're also the same size. Now we can just share clothes, too. But we were also, as I was saying, we're talking about classical music and sort of some of the hits it's taken. But do you find that with Pops, and especially with the holiday season, that it's sort of immune to what classical music is experiencing right now and trying to get younger audiences and all of those challenges?
Well, it is. I don't know if it's immune, but certainly there is a whole nature of this festival and the celebrations around it that seems a little immune or somewhat inured to what has happened in popular culture in terms of its relationship with orchestral music and classical music. People who never go to a concert of that sort at any other time in the year feel totally enthused about going to one at this time of the year. And we're really grateful for that. And we've tried to keep these. It's, you know, it's one good thing about things that are very traditional. People don't look to them to change as fast as the rest of the world. In fact, they don't want them to change as fast as the rest of the world.
And I certainly do count myself in that category. There is something nice about just going into the hall and sitting down and knowing what the evening's going to be like from going for many years. Well, Keith Lockhart, thank you. If people tweet us, we'll tell them where they can go buy the khakis that we both buy.
And by the way, if people, of course, we're on for, what, another 2.5 weeks now, and you can find ticket information at bostonpops.org. We're on tonight, and we're on all the way through the 24th at this point.
All right. I have been speaking with Keith Lockhart, conductor of the Boston Pops, the maestro of the mistletoe. Holiday Pops runs through, as Keith just mentioned, December 24th. To learn more about the BSO and Holiday Pops, visit wgbhnews.org. Keith Lockhart, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you, Jen.
And we're going to stick with the holiday theme with a look at how mobile phones are changing the way we shop and spend money. Kara Miller will be bringing you that story. I'm Jared Bowen. This is 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.